This Sunday,
side by side at the microphone, from the green light to the speed trap, Chris Switzer and Ray Garino calls them as they see them, and you better believe them.
Here!
Relevant news, biased opinions, and outright bullshit regarding every aspect of automotive culture. Gasp! It's mechanical trickery never before revealed over FCC-regulated airwaves. Thrilled to the explosive tension as Chris and Ray cuss each other down the track and barrel roll across the finish line, laughing at certain disaster as they shake hands with the devil! All that and much more this Sunday at high noon on the Motormouth Radio Hour. Call in and speak live with the Wizards of Speed and live feed, Chris Switzer and Ray Garino. Bring the whole family. Kids under 12 get in free. Every Sunday at noon on WHPC. Take the Long Island Expressway to the Meadowbrook Parkway and look for the sign saying no parking on the expressway and no express service on the parkway. Go right on Highway 24 to Garden City. $2 all-day parking includes pit pass. Sunday!
And when you're done at the town hall, get in that car and slide over. Turn that radio to 90.3 because you've tuned in. Motormouth Radio, Long Island's only automotive talk show. While you're listening to Rick Derringer and Ray Guarino and Chris Switzer.
That's right, Ray. We're not looking for the money. We're not looking for the fame. We're not looking for the ratings. And so far, it's been working out pretty well.
Yes, we've been successful. Oh, well.
Yeah, well, you know, this is Motormouth Radio, your one-hour automotive talk show. That man behind the microphone right there is Ray Guarino. That's spinning the wheels of steel and pushing the buttons and looking really cool doing it. And the frustrated disc jockey that he is on this fine Father's Day 2021.
Yeah.
How was your Father's Day, or how will it be?
Well, it's only halfway done. I mean, kids aren't even up yet. Yes, I haven't seen any of my kids. But, yeah, I had a great breakfast and, you know, saw the wife, of course, and that was all good. And now seeing you and looking forward to interacting with the audience, who can contact us at 516-572-7440. We're going to have a guest today. We're going to have Mr. Hal Schaefer from Hal About It. com. He's a flathead Ford / Stromberg carburetor and Ford historian, if you will. But he's an expert with these things, and he has a business where he sells this stuff. And yeah, you know, we had a couple conversations and talked about the things we've talked about on this show. The influx of Asian and aftermarket carburetors and parts as opposed to original OEM stuff. And
right, and the troubles that have been popping up because of questionable quality, I guess you could say, right?
So we're going to talk about that stuff. Our good friend Pete over Rolling Thunder, actually, I put Pete together with Hal, and Pete is purchasing some carburetors from him for his tea bucket.
Right.
There's a lot that goes into, you know, carburetor selection and tuning, and oh my word, this is like the problem my week too. I actually got over to the UD again yesterday.
You did?
Yeah.
You had to get together with the meeting of the minds, huh? Because
yeah.
I think I was listening to Playing in Traffic on Thursday. I caught a little bit of it, and I caught a little bit of your malady.
Oh, yeah.
And if you want to talk about it, want to skim over the subject, I'm all ears.
Well, yeah, we talked about it here before. In my car, I'm having an issue with my... I'm going to say it's an issue with the timing, but it's really not. The timing is, the car loves timing. It loves, you know, when you set timing on a car, you have, again, we're talking about a car with a distributor that you can move, you know, that has a carburetor, that has a vacuum advance, that has all of those things. Old school, we're talking.
Sure.
And what you have is, the timing is comprised of three things: initial, mechanical, vacuum. And then that all becomes total. So the initial is what you set with your timing light, or base timing, they call that.
Yes.
So my car loves base timing. Pontiacs call for like 6 to 8 degrees before top dead center. My car is happy at 16 or more.
Like, that's amazing.
I could feed 22 degrees, and it loves it.
Yeah.
And then you add the vacuum advance, the vacuum curve, and the mechanical curve, and then you're up to like in the 40 to 50 degrees total. You know, which
I was going
to
say, yeah, you're off the charts at that point.
You know that, but a lot of hot engines they like to run that way. And
sure.
I use the word hot. If I run the timing too low, the car literally does run hot because now it's retarded timing, and that's not good for engine temperature.
Right.
The problem I have in a nutshell is I can't get my car to idle under like 1,040 or 1,050 RPM. That's with the idle screws all the way out. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's like it couldn't be any more base idle. If I crank the timing down to like 8 degrees or so, yeah, the idle will drop. But then the noxious emissions will kill you. The car runs so rich.
Right, this thing here.
This thing is flashing. So let's.
Right, speaking of richness.
Let's do this. Let's go to the phones and say hi. You're on with the Motor Mouths.
Hey, Kathy John calling you from the fine beach on the east coast of Florida, Cocoa Beach.
Look at Sunny Chassis John. What's happening, brother?
What's up, brother love? How are you?
Sitting in the sand. I'm good. Sitting in the sand with my wife, watching the waves go by, having a blast.
Oh, nice. Wow. Nice.
And you're ruining it all by listening to us.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you know what? I just thought of something that we were discussing the other night on the other show. Is there a possibility that your harmonic balancer ring has moved?
That's a good thought, John, and that's something that happens a lot.
Have you actually checked top dead center to see if you're really at top dead center?
Yeah, I had done that previously. The balancer, to answer the question, the balancer is new, and I'm trying to remember. It's not a Rattler. It's another very common brand of aftermarket balancer. The other thing with the balancers is this one actually has the timing marks engraved in it instead of like having the tape. And usually what happens when that rubber ring degrades on a balancer, just like we were talking about timing chains, with a timing light on the engine, especially when you bring your RPM up, you'll usually see that, like, you'll see the slip. You'll see the marks jump around a lot.
And that's the funny thing, because when I was watching, and Ray, you were talking about the problem, John jumped right in and went cam timing.
Right.
And it's so funny because when John did it, I said the same thing out loud at the computer. I went, it's a timing issue.
Right.
We both said the same time. And I'm like, oh my God, great minds are thinking alike here. At least that's from where I'm sitting.
So you hung out till like the second, the end, the 2+ hours of the show. You were way, we went like 2:20. That night, yeah.
Really? No, yeah. I fell asleep at the keyboard, so I...
Well, I'll tell you what. I drove the car yesterday into Queens. I actually had Joe with me. We went over to UD, and I settled on like 13 degrees of base timing, which was enough that the car was idling at around 1,000, but I was able to shut it off without it running on, and it would perform okay. But I tell you something, you know, both of us, like our throats were getting a little scratchy. You could feel it's the carbon monoxide. It's the oxides of oxygen, the NOx. It's too rich.
Yeah,
it's too rich. And like I said, Holly Sniper, John, I put John on the case. He's going to check it out for me.
There you go.
Just go
all
fuel
right, no
injection.
Problem. So, all right. I'm going to go back to sunning on the beach.
All right, John. Thanks for the call, brother. Have a good time.
Bye, bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, John.
It's Chassis John from Florida.
516-527-2740. But yeah, that was the first thing. I was literally, when I was watching, and you were talking about how when you drop the timing, you were getting the noxious fumes.
Right.
And I'm thinking, can it be carburetor? I don't know.
Yeah, not only that, I drop the timing, and then the engine starts to run a little rougher, and it shakes. It doesn't like retarded timing. As soon as I kick it up, it just smooths right out. The vacuum comes up. It's like, okay, this is where I want to be.
Right, and this is something that I always lament about when we talk about stock compared to not stock.
Correct.
Because now you have to throw into your equation the fact that, like what John and I were talking about, maybe the dials are not precise. Maybe your marks are not where they are supposed to be. And when you have a stock car, you can 9 out of 10 times assume that the mark is where it's supposed to be.
Right.
And so that's that. Now you have to figure that out. Like that's on the table as far as the diagnoses.
I mean, you can look at it one way. You can look at it like, okay, that you could say, like, if the dampener was bad. Regardless, if you put the distributor where the engine, we used to tune it by ear. Guys would do that forever, just tune it by ear. It's the same thing. If I tune it by ear, I'm going to put that distributor where the idle comes up and the vacuum is up. That's where I would set it. And right. and I would be over 16 degrees probably. I had a thought the other night. I said, you know what? The distributor I have came with three sets of advanced springs. Okay. There's a very light, a medium, and a heavy. And what that does is it dictates how fast the mechanical weights come out. That's the mechanical advance, right?
Right.
And I thought that I put in the lightest ones because I like a lot. You know, with a standard transmission, you don't have to worry about a converter or anything. You can get all your advance in fast. So I said, aha, I probably have the lightest ones in there. I got to go to a heavier set. Well, it ends up I had the middle ones in there, which is what they call the standard springs.
Okay, so I could see you starting with those first. Yeah, that's perfectly acceptable.
Which basically brings all the timing in by 1,000 RPM. And I said, oh, it's not all. I'm sorry. It starts. It's like 5 degrees at 1,000, and it goes up. And I said, okay, well, that's around where my problem is at 1,000 RPM. So maybe those weights are starting to advance, and that's why I can't get the idle down. So let me put the heavier springs in. They don't start bringing timing in until 1,500. So I said, that's got to be it. I solved the problem. I didn't solve jack shipments. I didn't, you know.
I didn't get that just scared me.
No, I didn't get those shipments of jacks. I've been waiting for them.
No, you didn't get the.
I want to play on my deck, you know. So that was yesterday's test drive was testing that theory, which is like, meh.
Okay.
Yeah. So.
Oh, no. So now it's, so you're still in that, if you drop the idle down to under 1,000 RPM, which you can, it will run and it can run.
Yeah.
It's just you can't stand there because you're literally, your face is melting.
Plus, I didn't drive the car that way, but I would imagine if I do, I'm going to have a little bit of hesitation. I can tell by the way the engine's running. It's not happy. You know, it's not running smoothly. So actually today my wife said she wanted to know if she had to leave her car in the driveway. She goes, oh, you taking the GTO today? I'm like, no. I said, I'm leaving it where it is. Yesterday it almost killed me, so my throat's still recovering. I'm leaving it in the garage today. I'll take the FJ. So yeah, the thought is to go to like a Holley Sniper throttle body type fuel injection system. You're looking at about $1,200.
Ooh, look at you just completely abandoning the carbureted world here.
So talking to Doug yesterday, Doug says, so basically, well, I said to him, I said, so basically what I'm willing to do at this point, I'm getting willing to spend $1,200 to buy 200 RPM. And he just looks at me and says, yeah, so that's what we do. I'm like,
yeah, but know where your advice is coming from.
Well, listen, who you think I'm going to tell somebody who's like a penny pincher or somebody who doesn't like cars? No, I'm going to tell somebody who's going to tell me, "Got a boy, go do it."
Of course,
I'm not that stupid.
Dougie's going to give you that answer. We know that it's not a bad thing.
Hey,
we just know. We know. It's like we always say, we don't know everything. We know where to get everything.
Listen, and I'll tell you something else, which is the beauty of car guys. And this is like John included, you included, all my close guys. I'm sure if it came down to it, Dougie would say, all right, listen, just turn your back. Look at the fridge. Count the beers for a minute. And then he'd go into some, he'd open some secret compartment where there were tools, and he'd come out and he'd hand me $1,200 and say, here's the $1,200. Pay me back when you get a chance. He wouldn't even do that. So,
yeah, I believe it.
So that's right.
Well, you know what? Here's what I want you to do.
Yes.
Here's how we're going to solve all the problems here.
Mm-hmm.
I want you to buy it. Now you're at $1,200.
Right.
Now, what do you have in the shed, in the garage, under the pool, in the basement? Take it all out and sell it.
Yeah, good idea. Right.
Get rid of all of that stuff that has nothing to do with the cars you're currently driving.
Yes. You're right. You're absolutely right. Yeah,
you know what? It'll make that $1,200 feel really good.
I got Challenger parts I want to get. Doors. I have like seven doors that I want to.
Dude, the doors alone!
I know. But you know what? Here's the problem. They're too big and heavy. Like, you can't. I'm not 20 years old anymore. You can't really take them somewhere. And,
okay. No, here's what you do.
Yeah.
Here is what you do. Go join the A-Body, not the A-Body, E-Body Club, right? For E-Bodies only.
No, I'm in
Go
it.
Join the club.
Yeah.
Just go join the club and then post, I got doors. I'm in Long Island.
Yeah, yeah.
Come on and get them.
Right.
Whatever you're going to sell them for.
Yeah.
And you know what? Big men will show up and pick up those doors and take them away and hand you money.
What do you think doors are worth? Because I got to figure that out, too. What's the stuff?
Well, it depends on, as long as they're rust-free and dink-free.
They're in decent shape, yeah.
Yeah. I would, off the top of my flathead,
yeah.
I would say price them, but I wouldn't be surprised you know, this is just a stone's throw here. So keep your cards and letters to yourself, please. You know, but I think anywhere from $500 to $700 a piece.
Wow. That's,
I think if they're in good shape and still have the mechanicals in them and even the glass, I think you can, you can pull down some heavy cash with them.
That's a good thing to, you know, it's a good topic for the show. And we've talked about it before, the strategies of pricing out and how to sell your stuff. We talk about it all the time. That's right.
It's all important. And if they were electric windows.
Oh, yeah, these aren't. These aren't. Yeah,
that would be, holy smokes, that'd be fantastic.
Right.
Along the lines. But I'm just saying, if they still have the door panels intact, which I doubt it.
I don't have door panels. No, the Challenger doors don't have door panels. They have regulators, but don't have glass.
Has the
remote wind, the remote mirror on it.
So
they're good. And I bought them, you know, because the doors on my Challenger had some rust on the bottom. And I figured, you know, where else wasn't there rust on that car? And I figured these would be great replacements. And I never got to use them. I sold the car without using them.
Sure.
But,
If I put in every single ad, every single car part ad I've ever written, if I put in sold car kept part.
Right. Yes.
Car's long gone. I still have the part in my hand.
Exactly. That's why I asked Ryan Brunt. We had Ryan on a couple last month, the auto archaeologist. He's got that Challenger he was working on forever. I said, hey, you need doors? You need a rear end? You need a dashboard? I'm like, I got them.
All that stuff. And you know what? That stuff will go. It will go. Challenger stuff is hot. Super duper hot.
Yeah. Well, we'll see.
Yeah, it solves all your problems. You have people hand you money and they clean out your shed.
Right.
What's better than that?
And I tell you, I can't even say I've been tripping over these things. They're too big to trip over.
Sure.
It's like I have them standing up, like on the short end. So it's like having two bodies in the shed. It's like,
yeah, because they're as tall as you.
It's like, you guys got to move. I got to get what's on the shelf. It's like, oh my God. I know.
That's crazy. It's just nuts. I don't see a reason to hold on to them.
I'm getting there. See, I started small and I've been getting rid of my, my old tires. I've been breaking them down. I put another post up on Instagram and
good.
And that. Let's take a post here. Let's answer the phone again. Yeah. Let's go to the phones and stuff on and say hi. You're on the Motor Mouths.
Motor Mouths.
Yo.
Long time. I haven't called in a very long time.
Okay. You're right. I don't recognize your voice. Who are you?
That's okay. I used to own a blue Triumph Spitfire back in the day.
Oh, Jesus. Chip, yeah. You know what? That's how far out. You see what you do when you don't call? All right, anyway.
I throw you guys off when I don't call.
Yeah, right, you sure do. Well, what's happening?
Sorry, hey, everything's good. I'm calling to just say Happy Father's Day to my boys at Motor Mouth. That's all.
Well, thank you, Chip. Happy Father's Day to you, too.
Thank you. I have no car questions.
Okay, well, that's good. That means that life is good. That means you probably sold, you got rid of that BMW, that means.
My son got into an accident.
Oh, okay.
With it. He's okay, but it was totaled.
Wow.
And I'm going to be looking for something coming up, like this week.
Right. Last we spoke, you were looking to get out of the Beamer. And And what was it
you did?
I forgot what you were looking for, Mike. What was the...
For some reason, I am really drawn to this Kia product. I read good things about it. I stop people on the street just to ask them. And I haven't had a single person tell me to stay away from that vehicle.
They've gotten a lot better in the current years. Yes, they have. They really have.
I tell you, if I had to commute and get back on the highway again, want to buy a new car, it would be a Kia Stinger.
A Stinger? Okay, I haven't seen that one. Okay,
I would love them. Yeah, they're really cute. They're nice.
They are. But you know something? I have to get out of vehicles. I need one of these type of higher up, slight little mini crossovers or something. I can't be on the ground anymore.
Right. Right.
I'm getting old, it's hard to get in and out of cars.
Right.
I don't blame you. I don't blame you because you don't get into cars anymore. You fall into them.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I do.
So another Spitfire is out of the question.
Absolutely out of the question.
Okay, gotcha.
And I do drive past the guy's house from time to time. It is exactly where I helped him put it.
Wow, yeah. I hear that a lot. Guys buy cars and just don't do anything with it. Wow.
What a shame.
Now, he might be divorced by now. I don't know, because his wife was not happy when he put that in his driveway.
Yeah. Wow.
As far as I know, it's the same thing there.
Got it. Got it.
Yep. That's hysterical. I love it.
Listen, I'm glad you guys are still on every Sunday morning. I don't get to listen, but today I did. I'm out in the garage resurrecting an old Craftsman lawnmower, believe it or not.
Nice. Very good. Love those projects.
30 years. The guy, it's been in someone's garage for 30 years, and I'm working on it now.
Nice. Very good.
And two pulls, it started right up, right?
No shit.
Yeah, the varnish was like,
I learned everything from Ray. I know you got to take everything out. You got to drain all the fluids. I know.
Well,
if I get it started before one, I'm going to call you back.
Yeah, there's probably nothing to drain. It's probably solid. That's what I'm saying. It's all varnish.
Well, it was varnish, but I did get about 2 tablespoons out.
Okay. All right. So, that was probably water.
You're right.
No, it smelled. It was horrible. But it's old. It's got a nice metal deck. It's a 3.5 horsepower, you know, Briggs & Stratton. I think it's a badass. I'm excited to bring it back to life.
Beautiful. Yeah, yeah. Let us know. Keep us up on the progress. Please.
Yeah, well, I got 40 minutes to get it done before you get off the air. I'll call you soon.
All right, get going.
Right.
Okay.
Thanks,
bye, guys.
All right, so long.
Talk to you. Bye-bye. We have a challenge.
Right. Right. Well,
can
he just
fire up the lawnmower before we go off the air today.
That's cool.
I just like that he admitted that he learned everything automotive from you, Ray.
Well, you know, he definitely has a lot of skill and hands, and he's a very, very good finished.
Oh yeah,
finished carpenter.
The funny thing is I've learned a lot of stuff from you, but what I've learned is anytime I put something together, I always have to stand back and go, is Ray going to like it this way? Probably. Let me just do it. So that's what I've learned. You have been like my silent judge over my shoulder. Is Ray going to give me grief if he sees this? Let me just change it all.
Sorry about that. it's funny because back in the day when we were both younger, Mike would come and he would do a lot of work on my house. Because like I say, he's a finished carpenter. He's an excellent carpenter. And I would do work on his car, his father's car, and a lot of stuff. So we kind of shared our knowledge base. I really didn't learn much from him, unfortunately, because I wasn't as talented with what he did as he was with what I did.
I agree. But, yeah. Carpentry work, especially finish work, is incredibly talented.
Yes.
Hold them in high esteem. Sure. Hats off to the carpenters of the world. Those guys are true craftsmen.
Yeah.
And stuff I would love to do. It's like we watch some of those HGTV shows and you see the husband, like he can, you know, poop out a chest of drawers. Oh, let me make this china closet.
You know,
and I'm like always in awe. Oh my gosh, look how well he did.
Mike told me the same thing a guy did who put a skylight in for me once. I told him, you know what? I worked as a machinist. I could work to the 100,000th of an inch. I can make pieces interference fit with no gap. I said, but I can't make window molding. You know, it's always crooked. And they both said the same thing. You kick it, you hit it in the air, you shove it, you slice it, you throw it up, then you file it, you sand it, you put something behind it, you put a little, I'm like, geez, it's so crude sounding, yet it doesn't work for me. I don't know.
That just sounded like a every Saturday night for me.
Yeah, I know.
throw a little Elmer's glue in there, you got it.
Right.
Complete.
So guys have been asking, how's the 300, actually Joe asked me about your rocker panel molding. I said, that's on. I said, I don't think it's
they're
off
on.
Yet.
They're on. They may be backwards, but they're on.
Right.
they went on very well, and they like we had discussed, all of my plans to attach them all fell to the wayside, and I had to go with the Dougie method of just a regular sheet metal screw and zip right into the side of the car with the clips. I used the original clips, and I was able to. The problem with installing those moldings was hammering it with the ball of my hand. Because I couldn't use any hammer because I would dent it.
Right.
Dent the molding. So I had to use the ball of my hand to thunk, 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 going along the, knocking the molding back into the clip. So that was the swelling finally went down.
Yeah.
But the molding's run. I'm having a carburetor issue too as well. And I just wanted to, real fast. I've come to realize that if you throw the car into a turn, like if you're swinging onto the driveway swiftly.
Sounds like float level to me.
The car will quit.
Yep.
It'll quit.
Float level.
And I'm like, you dirty dog.
You know what doesn't quit? The phone doesn't quit.
Ah, I like that.
So let's go back to the phones and we'll say, hi, you're on with the Motor Mouths.
What's up, Ray? What's up, Chris? Dougie here. How you doing?
Hey, what's happening?
Dougie!
calling in and wish you guys a happy Father's Day.
Yes, thank you. Same to you, Doug.
Yes, happy Father's Day.
Couldn't get through on Mother's Day to wish you a happy Mother's Day, but, you know.
Right. And I saw, of course, my wife shows me the thing on Facebook today and said, like, you know, to all the fathers out there, happy Father's Day. And to all the guys who can't drive stick, happy Mother's Day.
If it doesn't have three pedals, it's not a real car.
Exactly. Hey, I got to tell you something. Coming back from the UD yesterday after I dropped off Joe, you know, Doug said at 4 o'clock, he looked out the window and said, hey, I think there's some rain coming in. I'm like, yeah, I heard after 4 is going to be some rain. So, all right, let's go. Let's clear out. Drop off Joe, and then as soon as I get a block from his house, blop, one big blop of rain on my windshield. I'm like, all right.
I saw it come out. I said, oh, man, because the car's looking good. The GTO's looking real good, right?
Yeah, thank you. Then it was
heads
like
up on that.
Then it was like two, blop. I said, all right, let me roll the back windows up. I'm like, I get on the Grand Central, of course, the 30 miles an hour. It starts raining. By the time I hit the Meadowbrook, it's deluging. I mean, pouring. I'm like,
oh no.
The car, I needed a goat wash anyway. It had to be clean. So, you know what? Made it home, wipers worked, put the lights on. I was cool. No one crashed into me. The new tires worked well. So it was all, hey, that's what cars are made to do. It's got a roof, it's got wipers, I got windows. It could go in the rain. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's the main thing. You got it back in one piece. So
right.
Yeah, I try and take the Jay Leno dictum and not get the car wet at all.
Oh yeah, I don't care.
Not get it wet at all. Right. Not especially not the 300. You get that car wet, it all settles in the interior. No matter where it gets
its way
wet.
Right to you.
Yeah. It does. It just gravitates right to the driver's seat. Funny. So, goes right down around the window.
I just figured I'd check in with you. Wish you a happy Father. I know you got a guest coming up.
Yeah.
And bottom of the hour.
Yeah.
Chris, I'm ready for you.
There we go.
The group is, and I probably fit in somewhere, but always something to look forward to.
All right. We're going to kick it off now, Doug. Thanks a lot, and stay tuned.
Thanks, Doug.
Okay, guys. Stay well.
Talk to you soon.
So long.
Bye-bye.
All right, so with that, we're at the bottom of the hour. We're going to do our stuff. Do we have an honor group of the hour, Chris?
Of course we do. That thing we do at the bottom of the hour. Today, the Motormouth Radio honor group of the hour. Ray, if you received an automotive gift for Father's Day, did your car do better than you this year with a gift of waxes and polishes? Or maybe you received a new set of hubcaps or floor mats, which make your car look better, but you still look like a bum.
Yeah.
Or maybe you received a gleaming tool for Father's Day. Huh? Wouldn't a gleaming tool make Dad smile? Ray, did you get a gleaming tool for Father's Day?
Not yet, I haven't, no. Well, we'll see.
If day's still not over.
That's right.
Well, if you received a gleaming tool, or if your vehicle did better than you did on Father's Day, you're part of the Motormouth Radio Honor Group of the Hour this week.
Nice. There you go. Very good. All right. So with that, we'll go. We have a special little addendum here on the on our spots for the bottom of the hour. So you'll know where it came. It was something I totally lost in the sauce. I forgot about it for a couple of weeks, and then I found it again and said, "Hey, this is going to be good. Let's do it." So, okay. And then we should be talking with Mr. Hal Schaefer from Hal About It, and we'll talk about all that cool stuff at Stromberg's. So, without ado, Motormouth Radio, let's go to break. 90.3 WHPC. Hit it.
I've been cheated, been mistreated. When will I be loved? I've been pushed down. I've been pushed round.
This show on 90.3 WHPC is brought to you by CarStar Celebrity Chase Collision, with two locations in Limbrook and Oceanside, who remind you that New York State law says you always have the right to choose which shop will fix your car. CarStar Celebrity Chase Collision offers a full range of services, 24-hour towing between Montauk and Manhattan, shuttle service, and they can help you with a rental car arrangement if needed. All repairs include the CarStar Lifetime Nationwide Warranty, ensuring that the experts at Celebrity Chase Collision are always on your side.
Y si hablamos español.
More information is available by calling 516-593-0920 or visiting online at celebritychasecollision.com.
You're listening to the Motormouth.
Oh.
You know them.
So nice talking to you guys. I miss you.
You love them.
I heard you talking about us, so I thought I'd call in.
Motormouth!
You want to serve dinner to them.
How you doing, guys? Sorry to interrupt.
How are you, Ray?
Chris is the sharpest drill bit, right?
This is the first time that I'm actually listening live and working on a car.
Our trained staff of two will help.
I'll call you back when I have the solution.
Well, thanks a lot, guys. That definitely points me in the right direction.
Now hold your breath. I hope you're sitting down.
Motormouth!
A tornado of urban legend and BS.
No, I'm not going to wax my Johnson. I'm going to wax my Evinrude.
As always, you are consummate professional.
When I listen on my laptop, I got to keep that thing screaming.
I don't mean to blow you up on the airwaves.
Quite frankly, there are better things to do with your time.
Obviously, I call wrong number by accident.
I want you all to know, sometimes I don't even wear pants.
I have no clue, and I can't hit it with a hammer to fix it.
Yeah, I want to know what the is wrong with my car.
I got to give you guys a call and talk to you.
Motormouth!
I'm in the car now.
They're going to talk about working on cars, but not going to work on yours.
There is no answer, and it makes you think, and I like the things that make you think.
What are you doing here?
I'm on break.
Okay, good. So are we.
There are answers, sometimes correct ones, and we may have them.
Motormouth Radio, 90.3 FM, WHPC.
Motormouth!
That wide track sound, they've got the Pontiac Tigers. GTO and Pontiac, come on. These pussycats are tame when you own one. But if you say go sick 'em, your tiger understands and you'll go riding round in your Pontiac. Driving's a joy with a cat so alive, riding round in your Pontiac. Pontiac for 1965.
An Asian proverb says, he who rides tiger often winds up inside one. American version, he who even looks at tiger often ends up inside one. If it's a genuine Pontiac tiger, like the GTO or Le Mans, these tigers have beautiful individual markings and a range of dispositions from high-spirited to absolutely ferocious. So if you haven't priced a tiger lately, check the ones at your Pontiac dealers before the sun goes down.
Pontiac for 1965.
Oh, scooby dooby 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 doo. I know where that came from. I know where that was grabbed from. That's very good.
Yeah, that was from an air check, a New York City disc jockey air check from 1965. And when I heard it, I was like, oh, man, I got to take a snippet of that and send it to somebody.
That was excellent. Yeah, you know, you sent me that a couple of weeks ago. It stayed in the email queue, and I kind of, you know, things get lost in the sauce. You forget about it. And I said, wait, because you know why? It was under a title of something else that we had been talking about.
Yes, it was. I hit it.
And then, and then I remembered the other day and said, you know what? I got to remember this for the weekend, and burned it. And Kim did us a big favor, threw it right in the vault for me. So I didn't have to use it on the CD. I was able to play it right off the vault.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. The funny thing about that is it's subtly very politically incorrect right now.
Oh, yeah, but hey, it was 65.
Yeah, exactly. You can get away with that 50 years ago.
All right, we got to keep an eye on the Zoom thing because Hal should be calling in.
Yes, and I think I see something now.
Oh, good. There we go.
I hear some clicking going on. I hear technology happening.
Okay. So we should say, hi, Hal, are you with us?
Good afternoon. Yes, I am.
Excellent.
Yes.
All right, Hal. I'd like to. You spoke with me, Ray, and you have now my co-host Chris on the line with us, and we're going.
Hey, Hal.
And we're ready to talk all about that voodoo that you do with carburation and intakes and all that cool Ford stuff. So, if you'd like, introduce yourself to the audience so they know who you are.
Absolutely. This is Hal Schaefer from Hal About It. I guess you hear my accent. I'm from Georgia, and I, you know, love vintage cars, especially automotive from the 30s, 40s, and you know, I have my love for the 60s muscle cars, obviously. And but yeah, I guess we're here to talk about carburetors today.
Well, yeah, mm-hmm. we freeform it. You know, the thing that got us together was I saw your Instagram posts and commented on them, and that led to, like a lot of social media does, it led to some conversation and phone calls. And then just so happens I have a good friend who was looking to upgrade the carburation on his T-Bucket with Strombergs, and he found these aftermarket copies. And I said, yeah, I don't know about that. And said, hey, you got to, maybe you should talk with this guy, Hal. So put the two of you together. Now, you know, Pete became a customer. So tell me, what is the difference and why should people stay away from these copy Strombergs as opposed to the real deal?
Well, as they say, there's night and day difference. I mean, from you know, the appearance, someone who doesn't know any better, they see two carburetors that look somewhat similar. And the first thing they look at is, oh, well, this cheap amateur copy you can buy, you know, from $175 to $300 based on the, I guess I say quality. All of them are poor quality, but there's some variances in them. And then you look at a Strombergh and they say, well, it's $495. And I'm like, yeah, but you get what you pay for.
Yeah.
And from there, I mean, from the exterior appearance, I mean, you're talking, you know, to identify a real Strombergh. I mean, now I'm not saying the original ones versus the new production stuff from England. You know, from the side, you have the bowl size, you have the 97 on it, you have the patent numbers. I mean, you have the high quality metal cast iron bases. You have the, you know, these Strombergs are within, you know, thousands of, you know, spec on machine shafts and plates. I mean, again, you have the high quality stainless steel with patent numbers, your kicker assembly, which are your control arms on the side that control your acceleration, your choke, and all, you know, and your accelerator pump rod and arms, just the high quality fit and finish there, versus, you know, the cheap copies. I mean, you know, they have no 97 on, they have no patent numbers. The actual metal they're made out of is cheap. You can see the impurities in them. The machine quality is extremely poor. You know, the thin metal control arms are lightweight and just overall poor quality. If you turn them upside down, you can see, and you know, you can see even light through the throttle plates once they're shut. They're, oh, you know, this, the machine quality is terrible.
Well, talk about a bad idle condition. There you go. I mean, that'll just let. So let me ask you a question. How crappy are these things? How poor do they perform and run for people who are unfortunate enough to buy them?
Well, you know, give you a good example. I had a good friend I've known for, you know, a really 35 plus years. I mean, he, you know, he called me yesterday and he says, you know, I bought two new Strombergs and I'm, you know, there's something wrong with them. They're just, you know, too much fuel. I mean, they seem like it flood mains and spark plugs are dark. And I start talking to him and he didn't realize that these are not genuine Strombergs. Uh-huh. They were the cheap amateur ones. And I said, you know, I looked at them and I said on the phone, I said, if you're standing in front of them, you bought these. When he bought them a while back, you know, and he says, I just, you know, got around to putting them on this engine. And he said, you know, I talked to him and he's kind of find out they didn't have no patent numbers, no 97 on them. So these things like to be cheap amateurs. Plus, you know, again, we'll get into it. He was putting two 97s on a V860, which is a no-no. I mean, it's just way too much fuel, too much carburation, and there were several issues he had, but reality was, I said, you know, hey, if you'd called me and you'd bought two new Strombergh 81s, that would solve your issue. He said, well, I don't, you know, I didn't bought these. And he said, you know what, I don't even know why we're talking about it. Just, do you have two of them in stock? I said, yes, sir, I keep them in stock. He said, just bring me two of them. Let's be done with this.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I learned something, too, and I've been rebuilding carburetors for many years, but I've never had the occasion to rebuild a Strombergh, believe it or not. And now I learned that there's different variations. And we all know the 97, but then there's the 81s, like you mentioned. What's the difference in those two carburetors, Hal?
Well, you have, you know, obviously CFM. I mean, you have Venturi sizes. You have... if you take two of them right beside each other, they outside dimensions and a lot of the appearance are the same. Now they could be small logo 97 or 81 or the large logos. And you know, that a lot of people identify by the logo, but internally the accelerator pump's a lot smaller in the 81 versus the 97. It's got, different power valve. It's got different size jets. Of course, the Venturis are smaller. The throttle plates are smaller, and there's some other issue, you know, items, but that's the main, just from an initial look of the carburetors. And obviously, the big steel CFM. I mean, you're talking so like a 135, 36 versus, you know, the old ones, but the new ones are 163 on the 97s.
Right, right.
Hal, what would you use an 81 model carburetor for? What would it be its application?
Well, typically in 81, they were designed for the V860.
Okay. Which is a smaller motor, obviously, right? 60 horse motor.
Mm-hmm. Correct. It's actually smaller cubic inches than the Model A or B four cylinder.
Right.
They have small. They're like 100. Somebody quote me on it, but I think they're somewhere around 100 and I think it's 130 something cubic inches, if I remember correctly.
Wow.
Then the Model A and B are 201 cubic inches. So it's a smaller engine, and it was designed for that. A lot of people use them on multi-carb setups, say on a V860 that they've done engine work to. If they put, you know, done cam and block and, you know, certain other things, put a set of heads on it, they'll put a dual setup on it. Or what's really becoming popular over the last few years is a lot of these vintage races with the Model A and B four cylinders where they're putting single and dual setup on a, you know, downdraft intake.
Wow.
That's become really popular. And even, you know, and even on a V8, you know, a standard 239 or, you know, standard bore V8 24 stud, or I guess even 21 stud, they'll do a multiple carb setup. Sometimes you'll have too much fuel and they want to run three, and they'll wind up running 81 instead of 97s. Yes, you run 397s on the engine, but you have to do a lot more to the block. I mean, you got to bore stroke it and put a bigger cam in it. And I mean, you just can't overcarb something. So they have their purpose out there.
Right, right. Okay. You know, I want to tell people, I want to let, this is a little out of the box for us. You can, people, if you want, can call and actually talk to Hal. You can call us at 516-572-7440 and ask Hal a question if you can, because we have him on a separate line today. So I know people are used to not being able to call in when we have a guest, but this time you can. So multi-carburation, that's what Pete's doing, and it's great because now you can mix and match those carburetors, and you come up with a CFM rating. That's the thing with the smaller Venturis. You get better, faster velocity, better airflow, and a more snappy throttle response, if you will. So you add a couple of those together and maybe put two of the smaller ones with one of the bigger ones. People are they're misconceived that cars need big carburetors. If your maximum RPM is going to be under 4,000, 5,000 RPM, even on a V8, you'd be surprised. You do the calculations, it'll come out to like maybe you'll need 450, 500 CFM worth of carburetor. So That's when these multiple Strombergs really shine, I think. Is that correct, Hal? Would you say that?
Well, absolutely. And obviously we can go ahead and mention, I guess, is that Stromberg in the last few years have created a new 97, which is known as the Big 97. Not that a lot of people confuse the Big 97 with the large logo at 97. It also has large logo 97, but it's a Big 97, which internally has been changed. I mean, it's got, you know, the power valves are different, the accelerator pump, the float in it, it's got bigger throttle plates, and it flows 250 CFM, which may not seem like a lot for, you know, a traditional four-barrel, but you take a 250 one, and the great application for these is people who are using them on, like, small-block Chevy, small-block Ford, or Nailhead, or any other traditional hot, you know, engine they want a hot rod look from the 60s, that they can take and, you know, mix. You know, I would say, for example, you know, a lot of these engines need to run straight linkage and, you know, direct linkage rather than progressive, because they still have to have enough fuel to run these engines. So you could take, for example, one and put one of the big 97s in the center, and then maybe put a standard 97 on the front and rear and run a tri-power on straight linkage on the overhead valve engine.
Right.
And you'll have enough CFM.
Right, right.
Really, yeah. It sounds. How hard is it to get them to work in unison? Like you said, that the center one would be a bigger carburetor than the other two. Is it a lot to adjust a carburetor setup to get them to all to work together?
Well, not really. I mean, you have to. You know, you'll want to sync them. I mean, you want to use a tool to get your vacuum and get your sync. You want to, obviously, you know, anything you're using multiple carbs on, you're going to want to sync them.
Mm-hmm.
But you're now that setup. Obviously, you're running three primary carburetors on straight linkage versus, you know, we could talk about running progressive secondary linkage. And when you're running those, they're actually true secondaries, and that them are more appropriate for, say, flatheads or smaller cubic inch or smaller flow engines. You know, once you get your overhead valve set up, you really, you know, to be able to idle and get enough fuel consistently across the bandwidth, your RPM range, you'll want to be able to run straight linkage and make sure you're there. But again, I think the NIST nomenclature is people want more, and they'll want to put three of the big 97s on there, and that's 750 CFM. Now we're starting to talk CFM, and when you're getting 750 CFM, that's a lot of CFM for stock small block.
Yeah. Right. Yes, you wouldn't put, you know, that was a misconception back in the day. Guys would take a 327 or a mild 350 and dump a 750 Holley on it and wonder why the car ran like crap. Well, yeah, the car really needs a 600, you know, at max, and you're putting a 750 or 780, you know, a 3310 on there, and it's, no, that's not the way to go. But that was always one of the hot rod misconceptions we've grown up with. So, yeah, people look at two barrels and say, oh, they're only two barrels. Yeah, well, they add up too. You know?
Sure. So. No, sure do. This is remarkable. How did you stumble on this business? This is fantastic. How did you get into this?
Well, I guess like any, you know, I guess I started out when I was a kid. My granddad was a World War II veteran, and you know, he logistics, and he loved vintage engines and cars and stuff. And when I was a teenager, a lot of kids are, I guess now it's got all the electronics, but we in the 80s, and I tell you how young I am in the 80s, you know, or as a kid and growing up, we didn't have all the electronic stuff that they do now. So I, you know, had the, I guess, privilege and blessing to be able to spend time with my grandfather, and we stayed in the shop. Most of the time, that's where I was with him, and I was working on, you know, some antique tractors, or we was working on old cars, and we kind of worked on kind of started me in the passion was when I was young, he'd bought a little 65 Mustang for me to restore as a, you know, grandfather grandson project. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, we never got to that. By the time I was a teenager, got to when I was about 16-17, he wound up with a brain tumor and lung cancer, and unfortunately, I lost him. And but you know, as when I was younger, I would work on that stuff and the passion for the 60s Mustangs when I was a teenager. And then, you know, the vintage cars, I've always liked the Model A's and the 32s and the all that kind of stuff. So I just started fooling with, you know, as a hobby, just, you know, rebuilding alternators and some starters and generator stuff and fooling carburetors. And I always thought it was fun. So, and then, you know, I do as a hobby. Obviously, it didn't pay the, you know, that's not my full-time deal. I have a college degree, and I've been for about 20 years, I'm, you know, with computers, and I'm a senior cybersecurity engineer. And a lot of times I'm in charge of lead over 200,000 endpoints doing cybersecurity for large corporations, financial and, and hospitals and that type thing. So that's my day-to-day job, but these carburetors are a hobby for me, and I just love them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'm looking at your website now, and the picture you have on your homepage, they look like little jewels.
Yeah.
They look so perfect. So not only do you have a passion for carburetors, you have an exceptional attention to detail. Just looking at these, at your work is just phenomenal. This is like sculpture.
Yeah, I have to say, too, what I love is the dichotomy here. And this is what people, a lot of people don't get it. And a lot of us fall into this, where a guy like Hal can have such an advanced degree and do advanced work as a living, but yet his hobbies are the exact opposite, old school. And we all do that. We all go back to the nuts and bolts, and then we deal with something else that's you know, more current. And I've seen that with car guys and a lot of other people too. They tend to have bookend dealings with what they do, and there's probably a deeper meaning to that. I don't know what it is, but
no, it's true, and I can totally understand it, Hal, because I too am working on carburetors and pursuing a cybersecurity degree, so I totally understand where you're coming from. But your attention to detail is nowhere near my attention to detail. It is far beyond just judging, but just looking at the photos of your work, and what you do is just, you go beyond the standard work here. I think this is show quality stuff, and I'm proud to say I'm talking to you about it. It's really, really good. Just to see, how do you keep that the screws and the fittings, how do you get them looking so good? what do you use to tighten everything down? I don't see a single mark on a nut or a bolt or a screw. That it looks like it's all one piece. How do you do that?
I appreciate it. But what we do is wind up using, you know, I use high quality new stainless steel screws. And the deal to it is, it's like anything else. There's a lot of people who want to call themselves rebuilding or restoring a carburetor or anything. They'll wind up taking some cheap carburetor cleaner and spraying it. This is someone spraying it. And my wife, he's on YouTube all the time. I was watching one the other night, just kind of was kind of hilarious that what this guy talking about. He was an expert on carburetors, and it was just like, you know, a lot of, he was mix matching the bases and center sections top. Just because they'll bolt together don't mean that's the correct one for that application or that carburetor. And but you know what they'll do is spray a little carburetor cleaner in it and stick a cheap gasket, basic cheap gasket set in it, and call that rebuilding. And that's not the proper way, in my opinion, obviously, of how to do it. These carburetors need to be completely disassembled, checked, initial checking, and then obviously we take them and put them in a hot tank in the chemical for 200 degrees for 20 minutes. Because I would say the most important of the people call the trick of doing this is cleaning it. You have to clean every passage and port in that carburetor. If you don't get all the varnish and crud and trash debris out of them, they'll never flow and function properly.
Right. Hal, what type of a cleaning agent do you like to use in the hot tank?
I use a couple different ones. I mean, I use a non-corrosive, a more of a deal. Well, you know, with the different agencies and, you know, federal regulations now, there's a lot of stuff we can't use. We could use, you know, 20 plus years ago. That stuff is, right, you know, been outlawed now. So we're having to use more of a non-corrosive water-based type chemical. But
right. I know guys who use Simple Green or Purple Power, stuff like that. I'm still using Hydro Seal. I have a nice little collection of Gunk Hydro Seal at home. That's what I dip mine in.
Oh, okay.
You know.
There's some good stuff out there. I'll have to look and see which brand I'm using now. But there's some good stuff out there, believe it or not. And where, you know, Simple Green works, but there's a lot of that stuff doesn't cut the,
yeah,
you know, get some of the grease off and certain things, but you got to have something. The biggest deal is you got to have heat.
Yeah.
And you need like a sonic type movement to be able to break loose all that corrosion and varnish and just trash that's inside them little port and passages inside the carburetor. If you don't, you're never going to get them to flow correctly again.
Yeah, I've been watching it a lot. I watch a lot of YouTube videos with carburetors also, and the trend now is to use, like Hal said, a sonic thing, a blast, and that's something I have yet to try. I have a machine. I want to buy a bigger one, and I want to try that. But yeah, it seems viable to me. You know.
Yeah, it works. I mean, it just works.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, in cleaning one, building one, I mean, there's a lot of things to take into consideration. Is it a rare? I say rare, but is it a large logo 81, maybe a large logo LZ, or maybe even a large logo 97 or something that would be desirable to keep? I mean, I try to save everyone I can, but the reality starts coming into play. They're this old. They've been improperly rebuilt. They've been damaged. They've been hammered on. The tops will warp sometimes. You know, when you start looking at them going, hey, the jet threads are stripped out of them, that can't be fixed, or the power valve, which are the most common when you buy them at swap meets and buying places people don't know. And sadly, somebody overpaid for a large logo 81 and sent it to me. And sadly, again, you have to say, listen, I can't rebuild this, and because I have to take the power valve, must be removed to be able to clean out the port passage and clean it out. And it's all, you know, corrosion. There's a corrosion that actually exists between different types of metal. You'll have brass, you'll have the metal makeup of the body itself of the carburetor, and they corrode over time. It corrodes, and it basically seizes, welds itself in there. And a lot of people use the wrong tool to try to get it out. They damage the head of the power valve. They break it off. And sometimes, people think you can heat them. Well, you can't just put heat to one of them, because you got to be extremely careful, because you'll warp it, and it's got a lead plug in the bottom of it. That's going to come out. Of course, you can replace that, but you know, when you're trying to get it out, sometimes, unfortunately, it's just, you know, with that, and it's not a savable core. I mean, if you can't get that out, if you can't get the power valve out, and then if you've got to take into consideration, if it's got to have a bunch of bolt thread inserts in it, if it's got to have and I can do all that. And if it's got to have a fuel inlet insert, you know, you can do that. But at some point, you know, in the old core, and if people say, well, you know, they came with stamp steel control arms and different stuff, and they rust. And if somebody wants to go and say, hey, I want you to use my original core
top and if it's savable in my base, and I want brand new shaft plates and I want brand new original Stromberg of the new stuff stamped, high quality stainless steel control arms, plates, you know, and all that, you know, granted, they're going to get, you know, your immersion tubes, your float, your jets, your power valve, your full gasket, your needle and seat, knew that. They're going to get their plates and all that stuff checked. But at some point, if they want it complete, basically look completely everything new on it, you just say, listen, for $495, just buy a new one. I have it in stock because you're going to be the same money or worse. And you still got, mm-hmm. it don't matter what I do, that core, I can hydroblast it, I can clean it. I don't care who you are, it's still not going to look new.
Right. Hal, do you still find cores, usable cores at swap meets? And if so, what kind of price range are you spending on them?
They really vary. I mean, you know, for a nine large logo, 37, I mean, if you bought it, I mean, they're jumping off, but they're normally somewhere, you know, you may find them for $50, but they're normally $75 to $125.
Wow. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
For a usable core.
Yeah. Sure.
For that's usable core on a 97. Now, 81 is a total different ball game. 81, you're talking, you may find them cheaper, but the average core price on the 81 is going to be in that $200 to $300 range.
Right. Wow. And that's what someone's saying is a usable core. You don't know until you get it back and open it up and see.
Right. Yeah, that's for sure. Yeah, you don't know the bad news until it's on your shop bench in pieces. That's when you're going to find out. And that's usually when you have to give them the bad news, right, Hal? You're the one that has to be like a psychiatrist in this way. You got to tell them that their pet died, you know? I can't rebuild this, sir. I'm sorry. You have to give them the Dear John letter, and that must be unfortunate. I'm sorry to say that you would have to be the bearer of that bad news.
Right.
So, Hal, how can people get a hold of you? What's your contact?
Absolutely. I mean, we're updating the website. It's got some basic stuff on there. We're going to add some rebuild services listing on there. You can go to www.howaboutit.com. You can find me on Facebook at Ford Flathead Carb. And I'm on Instagram at Real How About It. And we'd be glad to help you. I mean, again, I tell customers, if all possible, buy new. Buy a real, genuine Stromberg, not a cheap imitation.
Keep it real. Mm-hmm. All right, Hal, we're going to have to let you go because we're at the end of our time here. We have to do our close, and we'll keep in touch. Thank you for coming on with us and educating us and the audience about Strombergs. And
absolutely. Thank you for having me.
We'll follow up some more later. All right. Thank you, Hal. We'll talk soon. Okay. All right, Chris.
It's been a pleasure.
And with
that's awesome.
Yeah, we're going to be getting out of here in a minute or two, too, because Kim is coming in, getting ready to do Thunder Road. And we will be out of here as well. I know Mike is trying to get through, but it's too late. We don't have time to take his call, unfortunately. So so coming up, we're going to be we got a couple people in the wings that have yet to drop from the clouds. We'll see who comes in. If not, next week we'll just do it again ourselves. And and until then, keep your carburetors clean, I guess. So
that's right. And yeah, you never know. And that's what I love about this program, right? Because every time we talk about it, it's always, well, who are we going to have on? I don't know. We're talking to ourselves. Oh, right. No, we're going to have somebody.
So what do you say to people who want to know what we're doing?
Don't follow us home and keep your carburetor clean. Right. You're absolutely right. And happy Father's Day to all you mothers out there.
Thanks. We'll talk next week on Motormouth Radio. For Chris, this is Ray. And we'll see you next week on 90.3 WHBC. See ya.
See you. Bye.
Bye.